Hello everyone, welcome to the reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger. We're reading from the editions of Friday, September 3rd and Saturday, September 4th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. So glad to have you listening. It's been a beautiful weekend actually in Fort Dodge. We had some cloud cover on Saturday that cleared up by about 2 o'clock, which was nice. And then Sunday is starting out to be a beautiful day as well. We'll take a more detailed look at our forecast as we conclude our time together. Fort Dodge Noon Sertoma is holding a pork chop dinner from 4 to 7 p.m. on Monday at Veterans Memorial Park at 1386 National Avenue. Being held rain or shine, tickets are $15 per person. There will be dine-in, drive-up, and carry-out. The meal will be catered by Old Boston's Restaurant and Pub. Proceeds go to support the charitable programs and activities of the Fort Dodge Noon Sertoma, including Backpack Buddies, Veterans Memorial Park, and Lights at Kennedy. Bringing out the blades, Shiny Top Brewing has added axe throwing to their location. I was a witness to this last week, and it looks very interesting. There's a place downtown where one can eat pizza, drink cold craft beers, and throw axes at targets on the wall. Axe throwing, which has become a popular form of recreation across the United States in recent years, is the newest addition to Shiny Top Brewing at 520 Central Avenue. The brewery, which first opened its doors in the spring of 2016, has become an increasingly popular hangout spot for Fort Dodgers. When the business started selling its own craft beer, it marked the first time since 1885 that the city had been home to a brewery. In 2017, a patio was added to the business. Later, space that was occupied by the Fort Dodge Cheesecake Lady was made into an area to accommodate a large stage for live entertainment and additional seating. And Shiny Top continued to expand in the years that followed. In July 2018, Shiny Top added a pizzeria. Then on August 25th, axe throwing debuted in the space that Memories and Focus used to occupy. The renovated area features four lanes with targets along with new tables and chairs. When engaged in axe throwing, players stand behind a foul line about 10 feet from the target and try to throw the axe into the target. The targets are labeled with the highest points in the bullseye and decreasing the further the axe lands away from the center. There are multiple different games to play. It's a growing trend we saw, and part of it is the great social aspect, said Nate McCubbin, who co-owns the brewery with his brother Todd McCubbin. It's something not a lot of people have done in the area. It's a new attraction that is springing up across America, and we wanted to be part of it. The brothers had been brainstorming for about a year on how to use the former Memories and Focus space. They put their plan for axe throwing into action in March. Construction began in June. Throughout the process, the brothers disagreed on a number of things, ranging from whether or not to have seats at the bar or where the cooler should go, but they believe their differing opinions led to the best result possible. We disagreed on every step of the project, but somehow we always get it done, said Nate. I think we bring the best of both views to get it done. Plus, having a recreational area for axe throwing seems like a better use of the space than its previous use. The room was used to serve as an escape of sorts for Nate. It was used for our overflow storage for a while. I took a nap over there when I needed to, he said. And while alcohol is served during axe throwing, customers are limited to two beers while playing. You can order pizza and beer back here. You are limited on how many alcoholic beverages you can have while throwing. We encourage you to throw axes and then go have pizza and drinks. Axe throwing is available Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 4 to 9, and Saturday from noon to 9. Sessions are 1 hour. Age 14 and up can play. Prices vary depending on the size of group. A group of four is $20 per person for an hour plus taxes and fees. Todd, a U.S. Army veteran, said prices are right in line with rural markets. Appointments can be booked online only at shinytopbrewing.com. Customers must sign a waiver prior to participating. We go through a safety orientation and go through how to throw an axe and what's allowed, Nate said. We do a few practice throws and then they can start playing one of several games we have and they enjoy. An employee monitors the area at all times. Just making sure everyone is safe, Nate said, and teaching them about the different games available. Todd, who is also a real estate agent, said the community response so far has been good. It's been really good, Todd said. The people who have done it have really enjoyed it. In June, Shiny Top added a lunch menu to better serve on-the-go customers during the workday. Our regular menu is available. We also offer a lunch special every day designed to be served faster for those with limited time for lunch. Some of the offerings have included chef salad and breadstick, broccoli and cheddar soup, with turkey cheddar croissant sandwiches and tacos. There's one thing we can have for you every day and have it ready in 5 minutes, Todd said. The regular menu features specialty pizzas such as jalapeno popper, buffalo chicken, and big kahuna. The big kahuna features a white sauce topped with chicken, ham, bacon, pineapple, basil, mozzarella cheese, and a sweet glaze. Aside from pizza, Shiny Top offers appetizers like cheese sticks, pretzel sticks, and nachos. Sandwiches include the chicken bacon ranch, ham and cheddar melt, and sausage grinder. For dessert, Shiny Top offers a chocolate brownie served with ice cream and caramel. The drink menu includes cocktails like margarita, Bloody Marys, and a variety of Moscow mules. Shiny Top offers 6 of its own beers on tap on Wheatable, Rippin' Red, Irish Ale, Axe and Ladder, Honey Badger, Oatmeal Stout, and No Stoppin' the Hoppin'. Despite complications since March of 2020 when the pandemic impacted so many businesses, Shiny Top has been able to hold steady. Getting people back out after COVID has been a challenge. The gear up after people thought it was okay, and then another shutdown, it's that up and down. The business employs about 20 people, some full-time and part-time. Todd said the business has changed in ways the brothers didn't expect. 5 years ago, we thought we would just be a small tap room for a long time, Todd said. That's why we kept expanding, Nate said. It has grown in ways and time faster than we could have imagined. We continue to grow and enjoy being part of downtown Fort Dodge. The Dayton Rodeo has returned. A year after the global pandemic forced the annual Dayton Labor Day Rodeo to be canceled for the first time in 85-year history, the event has returned, filling up the Dayton Rodeo grounds and neighboring Oak Park for Labor Day weekend. The rodeo kicked off with Military Night on Friday, honoring those who have served in the armed forces, both past and present. Cowboys held on tight during bareback riding and saddle bronc riding while their horses tried to throw them off. Things got messy during steer wrestling as recent rains have made areas of the arena more like mud pits and less like rodeo grounds. Other events include team roping, tie-down wrapping, barrel racing, bull riding, and the wild horse race. For the young cowboys and cowgirls, there is mutton busting and youth bull riding each night. New this year is the sheep scramble for the kids ages 8 through 12. Money will be stuck to 3 sheep, and the first to get the cash wins the cash. Sign up will be open for the first 20 kids each day and will start 2 hours before the rodeo. The rodeo will continue through the weekend. There will be a free kids corral in the park from 5 to 6 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, and from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Monday. Kids will be able to meet and get autographs from the rodeo clowns, cowboys, cowgirls, and rodeo queens. Vendors, food, rides, and games will be in the park all weekend. The rodeo starts at 7 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday night. Monday will kick off with the Dayton Labor Day Parade at 10 a.m., followed by the rodeo at 1:30 p.m. The second Sunday supper at the Lehigh Methodist Church will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Sunday, September 12th. The menu includes hot beef sandwiches with mashed potatoes, vegetables, desserts, and a drink. Free will offering being accepted. The plan is to allow people to dine inside or carry out meals. Curbside service is available by calling 515-359-2329. Friendship Haven has announced 4 members of its board of directors. Matt Johnson, Director of Happiness at Fort Dodge Ford Lincoln Toyota, Sarah Hill, Associate Pastor at First Presbyterian Church, John Engler, an attorney at the law firm of Johnson, Mulholland, Cochran, Cochran, Young, and Engler, and Michelle Johnson, a retired cancer care coordinator at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center, have been named to the board. Matt Johnson is a senior high graduate. He has a bachelor's degree in marketing and management with a certification in entrepreneurship from the University of Iowa. He is past president of the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance and continues to serve on that board. He also continues to be involved in other community initiatives, including the Meals on Wheels program and the annual Fort Dodge Ford Thanksgiving meal. In addition to her role as associate pastor, Hill is ordained as a minister of Word and Sacrament in the Presbyterian Church USA. She previously served as pastor at United Presbyterian Church in Goldfield. A native of Philadelphia, she has lived in Fort Dodge since 2009. Along with serving on the Friendship Haven Board, her volunteerism in the community includes serving as a chaplain for the Fort Dodge Fire Department and serving on the Gateway to Discovery Board. As an attorney, Angler specializes in estate planning, probate and trust administration, business and real estate law. Michelle Johnson graduated from Creighton University with a bachelor's degree in social work. During her career, she has worked for various organizations, including Lutheran Social Services, Iowa Department of Human Services, Midas, Council of Governments, and Plots Design and Development. Johnson was also part of a team that developed and introduced and educated staff at Trinity Regional Medical Center on the palliative care program. She ended her career as a cancer care coordinator. From our files shown here, takes us back to September 2006. A picture as Matthew Irvin looks on, Pat Lennon helps his grandson Drew Irvin aim a BB gun at the kids' shooting range at the Ducks Unlimited Pig Roast and Dance. The event held at the Webster County Agri Center featured auctions, door prizes, and games for kids, with many of the proceeds raised going to wetland preservation. The second from our files from Friday's paper shows a picture of Rocky Davis of Lake City. He looks out over the crowd during the beard contest at Lake City's sequicentennial celebration in 2006. News of record is listed next. Magistrate Court on Friday, driving while barred. Anna Anderson, 44, Fort Dodge. Preliminary hearing way transferred to District Court. Speeding, Anna Marie Anderson, continued 180 days. Third degree burglary, Ashley Eisenberg, 37, Des Moines. Preliminary hearing way transferred to District Court. Fourth degree criminal mischief, Ashley Eisenberg. Preliminary hearing way transferred to District Court. Second degree criminal mischief, Timothy Ellis, 40 of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing waived, transferred to district court. Violation of a no contact order, Timothy Ellis, hearing set for October 1st. OWI, Jonathan Fievold, 65 of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing waived, transferred to district court. Public intoxication, William Ebner, 37 of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing set for October 1st. News of record from September 3rd, police logs Wednesday report two domestic calls, trespassing 10 block North 25th Street, suspicious vehicle 4th Avenue South and South 9th, car accident Evans Avenue C and Kenyon Road, unknown problem 400 block 2nd Street Northwest, fraud 2900 block North 15th Street, criminal mischief 2700 block 21st Avenue North. Suspicious person, 10 block South 15th Street, car accident, South 9th Street, 2nd Avenue South, theft, 200 block Central Avenue, car accident, 1600 block Triton Drive, missing juvenile was reported, civil disturbance, 200 block 6th Street Northwest, suspicious vehicle, 16th Avenue North and North 23rd Street, a suspicious person, 1800 block 10th Avenue North, juvenile problems reported, 1000 block Williams Drive, harassment reported, fight near 3rd Avenue North and North 18th Street, a suspicious vehicle near Country Club Drive and A Street, unknown problem 100 block South 12th Street, suspicious person 600 block North 16th Street, criminal mischief 600 block 3rd Avenue South, unknown problem 1100 block South 19th Street, water problems South 25th Street and 7th Avenue South, suspicious vehicle near 6th Avenue North and North 21st Street, and also the 10 block of South 12th Street and the 400 block of Central Avenue, and an unknown problem, 6th Avenue North and North 22nd Street. Magistrate Court on Thursday, providing false identification, Zachariah Newsom, of Fort Dodge fined $180.75. Consumption of alcohol in public place, interference with official acts. Nestor Salas, 25, of Fort Dodge, hearing set for September 22nd on both charges. Carlos Hugo Jimenez Bustamante, 38, hearing set for September 22nd. No insurance. Mitchell Russell, 35, of Fort Dodge, fined $796.75. Nurses Needed is the title of the next article. Unity Point navigates workforce challenges. The hospital has several openings for RNs. The demand for nurses and healthcare workers at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center has changed dramatically in just 2 years. The Fort Dodge Hospital went from offering a retirement incentive package to nurses in 2019 to ramping up its recruitment and retention efforts in 2020 and 2021. In 2019, we offered a generous package, early retirement package, I should say, because we had an opportunity to reduce staffing, said Shannon McQuillan, Vice President of People Excellence for Unity Point Health, Fort Dodge. We had a number of individuals who took advantage of that. However, McQuillan said there were a number of nurses who could have retired in 2019 but chose not to accept the package. Then in 2020, the package was not offered. Many of those same nurses chose to retire anyway. We had the same number of people retire with the early retirement package in 2019 as we did in 2020. McQuillan said there was no incentive to retire in 2020. They were offered the package in 2019 and did not take it, and they retired in 2020. McQuillan attributes that to the added stress healthcare workers have been dealing with since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. COVID definitely plays a role in that, she said. It does add complexity and stress that we didn't have before. We have seen that in other professions, such as teachers and other individuals who said, I just decided with everything going on with this, I think I'm ready to retire. I wasn't before, but now I am. McQuillan said if the hospital had a crystal ball, the package probably wouldn't have been offered. She also said the fact that the baby boomer generation is at retirement age has led to a decrease in workers. They are all around retirement age, so we are seeing a lot of individuals retire, and we just don't have the workforce to replenish that generation, McQuillan said. A vast majority of hospitals throughout the country are experiencing some kind of shortage in healthcare workers. McQuillan, who has been with the hospital for almost 16 years, said Unity Point is no different. We are experiencing it, she said. We are using the highest number of traveling nurses that I've ever known us to use in my time here. Traveling nurses are employed by different agencies throughout the country. Hospitals will reach out to those agencies for specific assignments. You pay a lot higher rate, but it meets an immediate need, she said. We didn't used to use travelers very often. It was very infrequent. And now, even those can be hard to get. In the peak of COVID, Governor Reynolds worked to secure an agency to supply travel nurses to hospitals across Iowa to support our patients' needs. That was super helpful. Another potential stumbling block in the area of workforce for Unity Point is requirement of all employees to be vaccinated against the coronavirus. Exceptions will be allowed for medical or religious reasons. Pregnant employees will be encouraged to get the vaccine, but a temporary deferral is available. Employees have until October 1st to submit their request for an exemption or deferral, McQuillan said. Employees are expected to be vaccinated by November 1st. If they choose not to, then they can leave voluntarily or they will be terminated, McQuillan said. We are requiring it. Carrie Jones, Unity Point Health Fort Dodge Chief Nursing Executive, said while staffing is a continuous challenge, the hospital has been able to maintain. We are proud to report that we have had enough nurses to safely staff our units, Jones said. Still, the market remains competitive. There are currently 34 registered nurse openings at the hospital. It's also a super competitive market because everyone is short, McQuillan said. Every person that hires nurses is competing against each other right now, more so than we have ever before. The hospital's partnerships with area community colleges like Iowa Central have proven extremely valuable over time. Other parts of the country had been experiencing a shortage in years prior to 2020, We had been fortunate with our partnership with Iowa Central. We weren't experiencing the shortage. They do a lot of clinical rotations with us. It helps us to recruit those students to our organization. That strong partnership with Iowa Central and having that nursing program right by us has definitely helped. Showing current employees how much they are appreciated is another key to keeping good health. Our staff does amazing work every day. It's all about teamwork, Jones said. According to Jones, there's a minimum of 60 nurses who work during the day on any given day at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Those nurses only include the ones providing direct patient care. McQuillan said the hospital will continue to look to additional incentives for current staff and for those the hospital tries to recruit. Showing them how much they matter, we value them as a people, and show them how valuable they are to our organization, McQuillan said. Leah Glasgow, president and CEO of the hospital, encourages anyone interested in healthcare to consider it as a career option. Working in healthcare is a very rewarding career path. There are so many opportunities for growth and development, and the impact you can have on your friends, neighbors, and community is very meaningful. I encourage anyone considering healthcare as a career to learn more about the many, many opportunities. Jones shares that sentiment. Taking care of patients is incredibly rewarding, Jones added. Our Savior Lutheran Church in Callander is holding a Swedish meatball supper from 4 to 6:30 on September 15th at the church. The meal will be takeout only. Those attending should use the north door. Cost is $10 per meal, which includes Swedish meatballs, mashed potatoes and gravy, corn coleslaw, a dinner roll, and assorted bars. Yummy. Lacey Dinklaw, licensed practical nurse, has recently joined Friendship Haven's assisted living program, which includes River Ridge and the Gardens neighborhoods. Dinklaw has held many positions over the last 15 years in Friendship Haven's long-term care neighborhoods, including Stone Heights clinical coordinator. She'll be responsible for evaluation, coordination, supervision, and delegation of personal and health-related services and care provided by assisted living team members. Dinklaw will also partner with the Director of Assisted Living for staff recruitment, train, and education, ensuring staff competency. The Webster County Health Department reported on Friday there have been 124 positive COVID-19 tests in the past 7 days. The county's positivity rate is at 10%, which is an increase of 2% from the state's last update. According to Kelly Bloomquist, Public Information Officer for the Health Department, the virus continues to spread throughout the Webster County communities. COVID-19 continues to spread throughout our communities. Delta variant community transmission is high. This means that if you aren't feeling well and go to work or school to an event and aren't masked or socially distanced, that you may spread COVID-19 to those around you. We continue to ask residents to stay home if you're sick, even just a little sick, until you know for certain that you don't have COVID. Health Department is continuing to urge unvaccinated residents to get vaccinated. We continue to ask residents to get vaccinated, Bloomquist said. Vaccines are safe and effective. Those who are vaccinated who have had breakthrough infections are much less sick and much less likely to be in hospital, to be hospitalized or to die of COVID-19. Please get vaccinated. On Friday, Bloomquist also provided updates on the availability of the vaccine, Johnson & Johnson vaccine, plans for future booster clinics and testing locations for COVID-19. Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be available for Iowa Public Health Departments to order next week. When Webster County Health Department has J&J in stock, it will let the public know so appointments can be scheduled. Boosters for J&J are also being discussed by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices currently. When the Health Department has guidance on this, it will let the public know. The Health Department is currently planning for future booster clinics. Current guidance is that boosters will be available 8 months after the individual second dose. The department is in the process of planning drive-through booster clinics to begin in October. Vaccination clinics will continue to be held every Tuesday and Friday afternoon throughout September. The schedule is anticipated to change in October. Please call 573-4107 to schedule an appointment. Vaccinations continue to be available at Daniel Pharmacy, Unity Point Health, Community Health Center, Iowa Specialty Clinic, Hy-Vee Pharmacy, CVS, and Walgreens. COVID-19 testing continues to be available at Community Health Center, Fort Dodge, Unity Point Health, and Iowa Specialty Clinic. Please speak with your primary care provider and call ahead for an appointment. The COVID hotline remains operational. Call volume is increasing. Residents are encouraged to call the hotline with any questions or concerns that they might have. Trained staff and nurses monitor the hotline 7 days a week. The hotline number is 227-7153. If a resident is traveling and needs a negative COVID-19 test within the last result within 72 hours, the Iowa Department of Public Health at-home PCR test kits, which are available at Webster County Health Department, have the potential to be returned within the necessary time period. According to the Iowa State Hygienic Lab, once the kit is dropped in the UPS drop box, it takes about 1 day to get to the lab. The lab is currently processing at-home test kits within 24 to 48 hours. All test results are then emailed directly to the individual patient. These at-home kits are available at the health department front desk during normal business hours, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. This is another option in Webster County as clinics are currently seeing a high volume of testing for symptomatic, asymptomatic, worried, well, and individual traveling. Faith United Methodist Church in Humboldt is holding its annual turkey dinner from 5 to 7 on September 15th in Morehouse Hall for dine-in. Carryout will be served from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. There will be two carryout lines for quicker service. The menu includes turkey, dressing, mashed potatoes and gravy, green beans, gelatin, salad, rolls, homemade pie, and a drink. Tickets are $10 for 13 years and above, $5 for children ages 5 to 12. Children aged 4 and under eat free of charge. Tickets may be purchased at Faith United Methodist Church office, Hy-Vee, and VNS Variety. Home delivery is also available by calling the church office at 332-2083 before September 14th. Carrie Conrad, MHA, BSN, RN, has joined Friendship Haven as Assistant Living Director for the River Ridge and Garden Assisted Living Neighborhoods. Conrad's responsibility is to ensure the neighborhoods are operated in a manner that delivers the highest levels of resident satisfaction, life enrichment, quality of life, while providing those services in a manner consistent with federal, state, and local standards, guidelines, and regulations. Conrad holds a master's degree in healthcare administration, along with a bachelor of science in nursing from Briarcliff University. She is active in community events, helping to raise money for various causes. The Fort Dodge Connections Brunch is being held September 14th. Fort Dodge Women's Connection is holding brunch at 9:30 on September 14th at Tea Time on 6th Avenue South. Reservations are required by September 10th, and you may call Kathy Binder at 408-7981. The speaker will be Mary Zeeble of Urbandale. She is a tutor and former reading teacher. Her talk, entitled No Longer Ashamed, includes her childhood with an alcoholic parent, a lifetime journey of needing validation from others, and how she became an overcomer. The special feature will be fall gardening tips. Julie Hewen Pyton, a 2001 graduate of Fort Dodge Senior High, has accepted the position of program coordinator with the Fort Dodge Community Foundation and United Way. She graduated from Drake University with honors in 2005, most recently worked for the YWCA of Green Bay with administrative support responsibilities. Her previous experience includes working on political campaigns and project management for a variety of nonprofits and charitable causes in Illinois and Wisconsin. Her experience includes fundraising, planning, and project management. She currently serves as the president of the board of the Fort Dodge YWCA. Zach McCauley has been hired as a full-time security guard with Iowa Central. McCauley, who graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High, was previously a part-time security guard with the school. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will turn to today's obituary page. Harriet Goodell. Harriet Goodell, 97, of Rockwell City, died Friday, September 3rd at Shady Oaks Care Center in Lake City. Mass of the Christian burial is 10:30 Wednesday, September 8th at St. Francis Catholic Church. Burial in St. Francis Catholic Cemetery, Rockwell City. Visitation is 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Palmer and Swank Funeral Home. The family will not be present at the visitation. Hat, as she is known, is survived by her son Steve Goodell, Dave Goodell, daughters Jane Hamilton and Jacqueline Dawson, 10 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, a sister-in-law, Murray Goodell, many nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her husband Dale, her infant son Tommy, infant daughter Tricia, her parents Fred and Tempe Fitz Schlachter, and sister Marion Louise Schlachter. Harriet Olivia Schlachter was born January 11, 1924 in Rockwell City. She graduated from Rockwell City High School in 1941 and attended the University of Iowa, where she was a member of Gamma Pi Beta Sorority and a member of the first female University of Iowa Scottish Highlander Bagpipers. On April 24, 1944, Hatt was united in marriage with Dale Goodell in Rockwell City. They made their home in Corpus Christi in Dallas, Texas, while Dale was in the Navy during World War II. After his discharge from active duty, they returned and made their home in Rockwell City until moving to North Twin Lake, where they spent the next 20 years. In 1995, they moved to Ankeny, where they participated in the construction and operation of Briarwood Golf Course. In 1998, they both retired and moved to Sun Lakes, California, and to Sun City West, Arizona. In 2004, it was back home to Rockwell City. Throughout her life, she enjoyed being involved in the community. She taught dance lessons starting in 8th grade, and again after returning from Dallas. She worked at the Advocate newspaper and was the bookkeeper of Goodell and Knopp Insurance and Real Estate Agency for several years. For 19 years, she was the Twin Lakes Golf Club manager. She served on the Rockwell City School Board for a total of 9 years and president for 5 years. She is a member of PEO Chapter EG, Friends of the Library Board, Reading Circle, and St. Francis Altar Society. Hat loved to play bridge, sew, and spend time with her family. Memorials may be left to PEO International. From Laverne, Edward Mason. Edward Mason, 79, of Laverne, died at his home on Wednesday, September 1st. He is survived by his significant other, Cindy Harms, children Jolene Reyes, Sean Mason, and Viana Mason, many grandchildren, many great-grandchildren, and his brother, Tommy Mason. He is preceded in death by his parents, son Edward, and grandsons Nicholas and Jesse. Visitation is 11:30 until 1:30 of the service remembrance Thursday, September 9th at Mason Linhart Funeral and Cremation Service in Humboldt. Burial in the Indian Mound Cemetery in Humboldt. From Fonda, Arnetta Kaufman. Arnetta Kaufman, 91, died at Pocahontas Community Hospital on Thursday, September 2nd. Services will be 10:30 September 11th at the Manson Mennonite Church with the burial in Rose Hill Cemetery. Visitation is Friday from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock at Larson Weishauer Funeral Home in Manson. Arnetta is survived by her children, Peter Kaufman, Teresa Simpson, Christina Kaufman, 8 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren. Larson Weishauer Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Leroy Simonson. Leroy Simonson, 83, of Rolfe, died Wednesday, September 1st, near Rolfe. Services will be Tuesday, September 7th, at St. Peter Lutheran Church of Pocahontas. Burial in the Powhatan Cemetery near Plover. Visitation is 4 to 6 p.m. Monday, September 6th, at Powers Funeral Home. Ellen Charlene Dunbar Hauskin. Char Hauskin, 83, formerly of Indio, California, died Wednesday, September 1st in Ankeny. A family service will be held at Lehigh Cemetery, Lehigh at Westlawn Cemetery. She is survived by her children, Rob, Rhonda, Randy, Rick, 11 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, her sister, Daylene Engelman. She was preceded in death by her husband, Bob, parents, Clarence and Ellen Dunbar, sisters, Eileen Weiss and Darlene Cummins, and one grandson, Scott Hauskin. Ellen Charlene Dunbar Hauskin was the daughter of Clarence and Ellen Graves Dunbar and was born September 19, 1937 in Lamoni. She attended Duncombe High School class of 1955, participated in basketball and vocal with her three sisters. On March 13, 1955, she was united in marriage to Robert Clarence Hauskin at the Little Brown Church at Nashua. The couple moved to Lehigh in 1957 and raised all four children. She was employed at Globe Union in Fort Dodge, Webster City Products, and retired from State Farm in California. In 1984, the couple moved to Palm Desert, California, where she lived till her illness progressed, then moved to Ankeny in April 2021 to be near Rhonda. Char loved her grandchildren and great-grandchildren, enjoyed following each of them in their sport and school activities. Char and Bob enjoyed dancing. Favorite hobbies were quilting, crochet, and sewing. Char started a line dancing group and was president of the first group, the Lively Liners, at Shadow Hills, Sun City, and Palm Desert, where she was involved in many activities like golf, fitness, bridge, and sewing. Cards may be sent to the Hauskin family at Box 427, Ankeny, 50021. Cletus Clausen. Cletus Clausen, 73, died Wednesday, September 1st in West Des Moines. Memorial services are Monday, September 13th at 11 o'clock with a luncheon to follow at Hope Lutheran Church of Hope in West Des Moines. Memorial contributions may be directed to the John Stoddard Cancer Center or Lutheran Church of Hope. Cletus was born April 6, 1948 in Fort Dodge to Henry and Louine Neiman Clausen. He graduated from Pomeroy High School in 1966 and attended Muscatine Junior College, graduating in 1968. Cletus was united in marriage to Nancy Kninsley on July 11, 1970 in Pomeroy, and they welcomed three children, Janelle, Brett, and Stephanie. He worked as an outside sales representative for Firestone Tires for 42.5 years, retiring in 2010. Cletus was a member of the Lutheran Church of Hope, taking part in the Men's Church Group, as well as a member of the Lions Club. He enjoyed attending car shows and classic cars. Cletus loved spending time with his family and especially watching his grandchildren play sports. He is survived by his wife, Nancy, children Janelle Capriva, Brent Clausen, Stephanie Mueller, grandchildren Stephen, Sierra, Christian, Javin, Chloe, and Cohen, brothers Corliss, Curtis, and Gary Clausen, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his parents. Ronald Coppin. Ronald Coppin, 82, of Fort Dodge, died September 2nd. Memorial services are Friday, September 10th at Grace Lutheran Church. Visitation 9:30 until service time. Bruce Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Dave Jones. Dave Jones, 81, of Fort Dodge, died Wednesday at his home. Services are Tuesday, September 7th at First Presbyterian Church. Burial in North Lawn Cemetery. Visitation 3 to 6 Monday at Laufesweiler Funeral Home. Dave is survived by his children, Kathy Jordison, Dave Jones Jr., and Don Grombach. Grandchildren, Katie, Anthony, Matt, Amy, and Kristen. 17 great-grandchildren. Siblings, Jerry Jones, Dean Jones, Lee Jones, and Kathy Haynes. He was preceded in death by his parents, William and Helen Porter Jones. David Leo Jones was born May 29, 1940 in Fort Dodge. He was raised on a farm in the Fort Dodge area with his sister and three brothers. He attended schools in Otho, Burnside, Badger, and Fort Dodge. After graduating in 1957, he joined the United States Navy. Upon his honorable discharge, he returned to Fort Dodge. In October 1958, he married Tony Palmer, and the couple made their home in Fort Dodge. They later divorced. He was employed with Krauss Cartage Company as a dock worker and delivery truck driver, and in 1973 entered into the real estate business. He owned and operated Jones Realty for a number of years. Dave wanted everyone to know that his life has been a great, wonderful adventure, and to live, laugh, love, and never be afraid. In lieu of flowers, send a bouquet to someone who can enjoy them now. Memorials may be left to the family discretion. Michelle Rosendahl. Michelle Rosendahl, 53, died August 19th at Friendship Haven. Celebration of Life will be at the Celebration Center at Friendship Haven on Thursday, September 9th. There will be visitation from 12:30 to 2, and masks are required upon entry to the facility. Michelle's family would like to encourage those attending to wear things that celebrate Michelle and the things she loves, such as Iowa State, Minnesota Vikings, Iowa Hawkeyes, Disney, and the color pink. Burial will take place in Greenfield Township Cemetery near Kinnear. She is survived by her brothers, Grant, Byron, and Lynn. She was preceded in death by her parents, Richard and Maxine Reinholtz Rosendahl, and a brother, Stephen. Larson Weishauer Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Charles Levine. Charles W. Levine, 82, of Pocahontas, died Wednesday, September 1st at the Pocahontas Community Hospital. Funeral services are 1 p.m. Saturday, September 4th at St. Peter Lutheran Church. Burial was in the Summit Hill Cemetery at Pocahontas. Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas handled arrangements. Sidney Nelson. From Lakeview, funeral services for Sidney Nelson are Wednesday, 10:30 at the First Congregational United Church of Christ in Lakeview. Visitation 5 to 7 Tuesday, September 7th at the church. Farber Ottoman Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that is the conclusion of today's obituary page. Let's take a look next at the lifestyle section. And we'll try and get through the anniversaries and birthdays and the arrivals first. Mike and Pam McClary. Mike and Pam McClary of Fort Dodge celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary on Friday. Their family includes Michelle and Tim, Shannon and Bill. They have 6 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. Pam Baker and Mike McClary were married September 3rd, 1971. In Fort Dodge. Arrivals from Iowa Specialty Hospital, Mercedes Wright of Webster City welcomed a girl, Emery Luann Wright, born August 30th. Grandparents are David and Heather Wright, Webster City. Out of the area, Gina and Keith Morehouse of Oakland, California welcomed a girl, Myla Faye Morehouse, born Saturday, July 31st. Grandparents are Dr. Leopoldo and Judy DeLuca, and Tom and Susan Morehouse. Harvey Earnessy. Harvey Earnessy of Fort Dodge will celebrate his 80th birthday September 13th. His family includes his wife Rose, Jim Earnessy, and Pam Earnessy. He has 5 grandchildren. He was born September 13th, 1941 in Leota, Minnesota. He is a retired pharmacist. Looking at some of the different goings-ons in the area, if you will. Webster County 4-H members, family members, and County Youth Coordinator Lindsay Cavanaugh had the honor of serving the catered meal to the veterans and guests during the Honor Flight Dinner on August 18th. The meal and ceremony was held at the Webster County Fairgrounds. Avila Bank has donated to the Trinity Foundation. Avila Bank recently made a $50,000 donation to Trinity Foundation in support of the Radiating Hope Capital Campaign. Funds will be used to assist in the construction of a new vault and purchase of a new linear accelerator for the Trinity Cancer Center. The funding of this equipment will ensure the continuation of evidence-based radiation oncology services. The Webster County Chapter of Pheasants Forever recently made a $500 donation to Serving Our Servants from funds raised on auction proceeds at their annual banquet. The donation is designated to go towards the Al Henderson Scholarship Fund. Kendall Young Library in Webster City will be starting Teen Lounge program on Tuesday. Teen Lounge is every Tuesday and Wednesday from 3:30 to 5:30 while school is in session. If there is no school, there will be no Teen Lounge. While in Teen Lounge, teens can enjoy crafts, board games, puzzles, movies, music, and video games. There will always be snacks. No registration required until further notice. Teen Lounge will take place outside the library. September is Library Card Sign-Up Month in Kendall Young Library in Webster City. The theme is Discover New Worlds at Your Library. It is the perfect time to come in and sign up for a free library card or use the one you have to check out library materials. Did you know that library cards give you free access to books and DVDs, the library of things, computers and printing, ebooks, audiobooks, e-movies, magazines, adventure pass to Blank Park Zoo, the Greater Des Moines Botanical Center and the Science Center of Iowa, and more? Help the library celebrate the joys of having a library card all of September. Every time you check out during the month of September, you are eligible to enter the library-wide drawing. There will be prizes for each age group, children, teens, and adults, so make sure to stop by the library throughout the month of September to check out and participate in Library Card Sign-Up Month. Adults must bring in a picture ID and proof of current address to sign up for a card. Trinity Regional Medical Center is holding health screenings September 9th and 13th. Community blood work screenings will be held from 7 a.m. to noon on September 9th. Stroke and vascular screenings will be held on September 13th. Appointment times are required for both screenings. Call Tammy Davis, RN, at 574-6505 for more information and to schedule an appointment. Pheasants Forever Webster County Chapter made a $500 donation to disabled American veterans from funds raised on auction proceeds at the annual banquet as well. The Fort Dodge Choral Society is feeling happy together as they prepare for their upcoming performance season. Bruce Perry, conductor of the Choral Society, said after months of no rehearsals, seeing the smiling faces as the group sang the first strains of Hallelujah was a pure joy. The pandemic forced the Choral Society to cancel their productions last year. At the beginning of August, the Choral Society was finally able to perform again with their concert entitled Silent No More to celebrate the group's return to singing and to honor Ludwig van Beethoven's 250th birthday. Perry said their Silent No More concert packed in a full house. We had about as many people in there as we could. Said it was wonderful, Perry said. People were very appreciative. I think people are longing to get out and to return to some normality. Perry said he chose Happy Together as the theme for this season, not only because he feels the community should portray that sense of togetherness, especially in times of struggle. COVID was hard on everyone and remains hard on people. I chose the theme Happy Together because we are happy to be back together again, and the one thing that really does unite us is music and singing. Perry said he loves to see how music can change a person's mood. At Monday night rehearsal, people are coming in, they've had a long day, then by the time they're leaving 2 hours later, they're invigorated and energized by the synergy of the music and the group. The title of the Choral Society's first performance this season is called I Sing Because I'm Happy. Perry wrote, preparing for the next season is a reminder of music's power to make us happy together. The group will also perform a Christmas concert called I'll Be Home for Christmas. We got the idea that this is for people who maybe didn't get to go home last Christmas. Their March performance is entitled Together Again for the First Time and will feature famous partnerships such as Robert Rodgers and Hammerstein, Gilbert and Sullivan, Simon and Garfunkel, among others. Finally, their last performance for the season will be Heavenly Voices, and they will partner with the Chamber Orchestra to perform more classical works. Each performance will be at a different local church. Different concerts have different space requirements and different instrument requirements. Plus, it's always kind of fun to showcase some of the beautiful houses of worship. He said some concerts require more space, such as when they partner with the Chamber Orchestra or a concert that heavily features an organ would require a church where the organ is in the front of the sanctuary. Tickets for the concerts will be $10 at the door, but they will begin selling season membership soon. Perry said, I'll be honest, the arts can be an expensive mistress. Buying the music, hiring a pianist, orchestras and soloists, printing programs all require funding. The Choral Society has begun rehearsals for this season, but Perry said new members are always welcome. They practice every Monday evening. We're pretty welcoming. We're all kind of united by the love of singing. The group usually ranges between 25 to 35 singers, ranging in ages from 15 to 80 years old. We'll go ahead and flip over to the sports section and take a look at some of the results from the football Friday night. The St. Ed McGills had a tough row. West Bend was the stronger team Friday night as they defeated St. Edmunds 70-26 after West Bend established the first 26 points in the game. Physical, Coach Dillon said, they came out and were physical with us from the opening kickoff. I didn't think we did a good enough job of matching that, and when things started to go bad, they went bad in a hurry. West Bend Mallard's team is 1-1. Max Fear accounted for 6 touchdowns and ran for 117 yards as the Wolverines racked up 353 yards on the ground. We just didn't match them physically, said Coach Dillon. It's really what it comes down to. We showed a few good things late in the game, but we had trouble getting going early on. And once we got behind, they made sure to continue to do what they wanted to do. St. Edmund is in action when they travel to Buffalo Center next Friday night, where they will meet North Iowa. Fort Dodge Senior High's football team defeated Ames. The Dodgers doubled up on the Little Cyclones by a score of 42-21. Javian Jondo has become a focal point of the Fort Dodge offense, making the wide receiver a marked man in the eyes of opposing coaches preparing for the Dodgers. What teams like Ames are quickly finding out the hard way, though, is something head coach Nick Mosier has seen in Jondo all along. The junior isn't going to be just a one-dimensional game changer. Jondo returned a kickoff 99 yards for a touchdown in the first half, took an interception back 100 yards to close the scoring for good measure in the fourth quarter as the Dodgers doubled up Ames 42-21 in Ames on Friday night. Fort Dodge's 6th consecutive victory in the long-standing series with the Little Cyclones wasn't quite as flashy or statistically pleasing as some of its recent wins, but it was every bit as dominant. Senior tailback John Presswood had 190 yards from scrimmage, and the Dodger defense settled down in the second half again to finish Ames off. Fort Dodge Senior High is home next Friday night when they host Waterloo East. In other games in the area, the Pocahontas Indians defeated South Central Calhoun, and in a score of 7-0 for the first victory for the Indians in the series since 2007. The Webster City Lynx defeated Boone on Friday night by a score of 42-0, bouncing back from a season opening loss to Humboldt. Southeast Valley took on Emmitsburg at Emmitsburg and cruised over Emmitsburg for a 46-21 win in another area football game. The atmosphere and energy inside Hodges Fieldhouse didn't feel like any normal regular season contest, and that only helped fuel the second-ranked Iowa Central volleyball team. Playing in front of a rowdy and large crowd Friday night, the Tritons swept number 1 Parkland by scores of 25-23, 27-25, 25-15. With the tournament featuring 2 games going on at the same time, the court was split in 2. That didn't keep the Iowa Central fans from making noise. We would have loved to have had it set up for 1 match at a time, said head coach Sarah Horn, but it just didn't work. With how we were able to do it, though, it was really awesome. You could tell the crowd was helping our girls out. We felt that pressure against Ellsworth earlier this week, of playing in front of a home crowd, and I think Parkland felt it Friday night. Caitlin Steffes and Dory Hodgick led with 16 kills each. Alicia Johnson had 40 assists. Baylen Johnson had 28. Bailey Dugan had 11 digs, and Hodgick had 14 digs and a serving ace. This was a big win for our program and for our girls. Parkland is an incredible program that is consistently in the top three and competing for the national title. I've never beat them in my coaching career here, so I know this will be one I'll remember for a long time. In the spring, Parkland knocked off Iowa Central to advance to the national championship game. The Cobras would fall to Illinois Central, who the Tritons will face here on Saturday. Iowa Central is also scheduled to meet Parkland again next week in a tournament. It's a big win for our program, that's for sure, but we'll see them here again. It's just really great to play so many ranked teams and go up against some of the best programs in the country to prepare us for November when we really want to beat these teams. Earlier in the day, the Tritons swept North Dakota State College of Science. Steffes, Dobson, and Hajik led the Tritons. The Tritons were scheduled to face William Penn and Illinois Central. Iowa Central was scheduled on Saturday to play William Penn and then Illinois Central. And those results will be published in Monday's Messenger. Let's go ahead and take a look at the weather forecast as our time together is quickly drawing to a close, as it seems like it usually does. We've got a beautiful Sunday underway. As I read this, it's 79 degrees with 45% humidity. It can't be much nicer than that. On Monday, mostly clear, high of 82, low of 65. Tuesday, partly cloudy, high of 77, low of 51. Clear Wednesday, high of 75, low of 50. Thursday, clear, high of 77, low of 53. Friday, clear, 79, low of 57. And on Saturday, partly cloudy skies, looking for a high of 82. So no rain chances here in the immediate 7-day forecast. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, September 3rd and Saturday, September 4th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org, and we certainly hope you're able to enjoy them. Thank you for your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, take good care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you again real soon right here on IRIS.